Welcome back to Project Socrates. My name is Colleen Harding. This broadcast is airing September 11th, 2014 on the Freedomizer Radio Network. Now, it's a solemn day, and I think it's critically important that we talk about the events of September 11th, 2001. Now, many of you are already aware that this is a serious issue for me as a political scientist. And yes, I do question the official government account of 9/11. Now, for those of you who outright reject the idea of questioning the official story, I ask you to keep an open yet skeptical mind. I challenge you to hear what my guest has to say. And you'll find that it's completely different than any of the silly theories you may have previously heard. Now, folks, a lot of you already know my guest, Ryan Dawson. He's an author. He's a filmmaker. He has created one of the most useful films of all time. His documentary, War by Deception, stands alone in the genre. This is not your weird uncle's conspiracy theory film, folks. If you're hoping for shape-shifting reptilians, you're barking up the wrong tree. Because this, it comes off more like a political science dissertation. War by Deception is highly sourced, and unlike many of his peers, Ryan names names. This is critical because the paper trails of 9/11 do lead to a complex web of individuals, and these people do have names. I'm not interested in non-specific blanket terms like NWO or Illuminati or anything like that. It's amateurish at best and deceptive at its worst. Now, it's my opinion that Ryan's materials are some of the most logical and scholarly available. Now, there are no shortage of examples of disinformation on the web, and self-appointed leaders in alternative media continuously propagate these falsehoods. This is your logical alternative, folks. Now, at some point, you have to wonder if the people peddling nonsense are just dumb or are they messing with you. So get yourself a copy of his DVD. We only have an hour, so this is going to be a rough overview, okay, folks, about the issues concerning the September 11th. Now, his film painstakingly lays out all the subtle details. If you do believe the official story of 9/11, I double dog dare you to view the free copy available on YouTube of War by Deception. Now, in spite of the time zones, here he comes, straight from his home in Japan. Put your hands together, ladies and gents. I present to you Ryan Dawson. Ryan, welcome to the show. Glad to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. That was a very well done introduction.
Thank you. Thank you. No, I've been a fan of yours for a long time. I love the YouTube channel. I love your forum, Rise 2 Cents, anti-neocons, fantastic. The stuff you were doing on C-Bell Edmonds' website, The Boiling Frogs, I read that last year. Fantastic stuff. So it's really an honor, and especially it's appropriate given that when this airs, it'll be September 11th. So I think it's really important that we're doing the show. So I'm really glad that you're here. So let me just get in right into it because we only have an hour. So detractors say that questioning 9/11 is silly, nonsensical, tinfoil hat pursuit. It does get lumped into the realm of Bigfoot and chupacabras. So why is this a legitimate topic for a serious student of history and politics, and how does it relate to the military-industrial complex?
Well, I think, like, the way I like to start, I understand why people have that opinion, because there is a lot of nonsense about 9/11. There's a lot of nonsense about any conflict or war or covert operation. There's a lot of disinfo, and just generally on the internet, there's a lot of goofy stuff about anything. People deny everything sometimes, but it's a very important topic to take a look at. And I start with a point where I think most people can agree. When you look at the war in Iraq, the second war in Iraq, or, well, either war, both were started by deceptions. You have to understand that if you were alive during 2001 to 2003, you could watch TV and you saw them lie to you and say that Iraq was associated to 9/11 hijackers. This is documentable. They said that Mohammed Atta, who was the lead hijacker on Flight 11 that ran into one of the World Trade Centers, met in a meeting in Prague with senior Iraqi officials and that they passed anthrax to him. Now, following the airplane attacks, there was an anthrax attack where letters filled with anthrax were sent to U.S. senators and some journalists. And on those letters, it said death to America, death to Israel, and it had 9/11 written on the top. Now, at first, everyone assumed Al-Qaeda must have sent anthrax letters around. And then we had Israeli security forces saying they witnessed this transfer at this meeting in Prague in the Czech Republic with Iraqi officials. Now, that attached Iraq to 9/11, but Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. So right there, you don't have to uncover the entire mystery. That alone already is associating a country to an attack that they had nothing to do with, which led us to a war where over 1 million people were murdered. That's why it's important. And of course, war is associated to the military-industrial complex.
I like the metaphor you use in War by Deception, that the military-industrial complex is driving the car. The car is government, and the road is war. Did I do that right? Is that your metaphor?
Yeah, basically, you've got the MIC in the driver's seat, and you have the Federal Reserve would be like the gasoline, because you got to have money in it. It was a little MS Paint crude cartoon I made for it, but the analogy stands. I was explaining privateers and how, of course, in any war, you can say, well, the military-industrial complex made profits. Well, duh. I mean, anytime you have a conflict or war, weapons industries make money. But why Iraq? You can make money off any war. So why would you attack Iraq? And you look at it and you see it wasn't about big oil, because I heard a lot of leftist gatekeepers saying, well, no war for oil, which is very easy to understand. And yes, it's the Middle East and there's oil all over the Middle East. So it was an easy kind of answer, but it doesn't fit with the facts. Big oil actually opposed the war. They already had the oil for food program. They already had the oil, and it's a lot cheaper to buy than it is to steal. If you look at the origins of the lies, they weren't from big oil. They came from the Office of Special Plans, which was sort of an office within an office inside the Pentagon. It was headed up by Douglas Feith. He's an Israeli partisan, diehard Zionist. His sister's a settler. He's a partner with Feith and Zell, who got a lot of contracts during the Iraq War. He's an underling of Richard Perle, who is the head of the Defense Planning Board inside the Pentagon, the third man down under Rumsfeld at the time. These guys, with their cohorts in the media, William Safire, Judith Miller, Bill Kristol, and Robert Kagan, who you may know, Kagan's wife has been part of this conflict with Ukraine. That's Victoria Nuland. They had a newspaper called the Weekly Standard. And through that media and the New York Times, they would create one lie after another about Iraq. They lied about chemical weapons, biological weapons, and nuclear weapons.
You know what?
And all of it's easily debunkable.
Can you tell us about Judith Miller? Because I think that's an interesting point, and it's something that your film does. You know, there's so many things that this film does that are interesting that no one else covered. But let's talk about Judith Miller a minute, because she's a pretty key figure in the propaganda arm of this story. So tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, she calls herself a chemical weapons expert. She wrote a book about it. This lady has blamed Iraq for everything since the Oklahoma City bombing. Actually, before that, she blamed the World Trade Center attack in 1993 in Iraq. She blamed the Oklahoma City bombing on Iraq. Of course, she blamed 9/11 on Iraq. Everything is Iraq's fault. And she was wrong every time. She falsified evidence. What she did was she was using the Iraqi National Congress, which is something the U.S. set up to begin with Chalabi, Ahmed Chalabi, who convicted for bank fraud, but he ended up becoming the oil minister in Iraq and later the vice president, or like the vice prime minister. She would use them as a source for really in what was in reality lies she made up herself about mobile weapons labs, anthrax, botulism, VX gas, etc. A bunch of scare tactics saying Iraq had all these things, and they didn't. The woman went to jail for 85 days for her role in the plane affair. And she was dating Louis Leibowitz, who was better known as Louis Libby, who was the chief of staff for Dick Cheney, who was the vice president at the time. And Louis Libby was also the lawyer for the Mossad, Israeli Mossad. And Mark Rich, who Bill Clinton gave a pardon to his last day in office. Which just shows you how it goes, but it doesn't matter if it's Democrats or Republicans.
And that's an important point to make for those of you who maybe are unaware. You know, it isn't just one particular party. You know, I came into the game questioning the neocons, but over time, I can see now that it's bigger than that. It's the military industrial complex knows no party. So yeah, that's an important point to make. But going back to Judith Miller, I think you make an interesting point in the film about the anthrax she receives compared to the anthrax that others receive. So let's talk
about that. Well, see, that was very suspicious, because Fox News and Judith Miller, who are both very pro-war in Iraq, mm-hmm. they got fake anthrax, whereas the two senators, Tom Daschle and Patrick Leahy, one was on the chairman of the Judicial Committee, they're both in positions to shut down the Patriot Act, which they didn't after they got anthrax. Everybody voted for it uniformly, pretty much. But you see these guys in Fox and girls like Judith Miller, women, I guess, getting this hoax anthrax, which was of no danger whatsoever. Oh. But what I found very interesting is whoever sent the hoax anthrax also sent the actual anthrax because they screwed up. The note inside with the hoax anthrax was verbatim what was sent with the real anthrax. But they, because of what they assumed it would be open maybe 2 days later, but with the mail being shut down and everything, it wasn't open. And so they sent them both, but they got mailed, one was mailed 2 days after the other, but they were both open later. So therefore, it's not a copycat attack. They couldn't see what the note was, and they definitely couldn't guess what it said. So they had identical notes from Florida and New Jersey, exactly where the hijacker cells were. One was in Joaquin, the other was in Hollywood, Florida. The Israeli Mossad was living next door to Mohammed Atta in Florida. So whoever actually sent the anthrax knew where Al-Qaeda was and tried to blame it on them. And you put that together with what I said earlier with the Israeli security forces witnessing a meeting in Prague where Iraqis gave anthrax to Al-Qaeda. And you can get, and when the notes also saying death to Israel on them, you can guess who actually sent them. And what about that meeting, it turns out Iraq didn't have any anthrax. Al-Qaeda didn't have any anthrax, and there was no meeting in Prague. So how do you witness the transfer of anthrax at a meeting that never took place, and why did the media jump on that after the fact?
Facepalm. So then can we relate that to the Niger forgery?
Absolutely. Well, more on Miller first, because Miller's big – one of her biggest lies, she had several aluminum tubes, all this stuff, but one was about mobile weapons labs, which produced anthrax. And Colin Powell went to the UN with a mock vial of anthrax, and he said because the legal reason to invade Iraq was they were breaking one UN resolution in 1441 and stipulated they couldn't have WMDs. So that was the legal pretext to get a coalition to attack Iraq, because it wasn't just America. The UK and a bunch of little countries attacked. So he put pictures. Of course, they're cartoons because they didn't have any real pictures because they didn't actually exist. But he had cartoons from Judith Miller about these mobile labs. And so without – she compounded on the lies that we got from Gary Schmidt, James Woolsey, and Fred Barnes in the Weekly Standard, Crystal's production. Then William Crystal said the same thing, all anthrax, 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 right? And so what you asked me about, though, with the Niger forgeries, that was when they were lying about nuclear material. They said that Saddam Hussein was buying yellow cake, which is just oxidized uranium, something you need to build a bomb. They said he was buying yellow cake uranium from Niger, which is an African country that does have a lot of uranium. But the lie was so bad that the foreign minister who signed it had been out of power for several years. They had an obsolete signature on there. So that's a big deal, though, because you can't really blame that on incompetence. A lot of leftists like to say, well, George Bush is just an idiot and they just thought they had weapons and they didn't. He was really stupid. No, I mean, he may be an idiot, but that's not what happened. They purposely lied. You can't accidentally sign someone else's name on the paper. You have to do that on purpose. And that came from Michael Adeen and Gurbanifar, who's famous for his Iran-Contra shenanigans. And it was stovepipe, not to the CIA, but to the Office of Special Plans, where Pearl and Feith acted like it was gospel. It ended up in Bush's State of the Union address, and then later he made it another speech in Ohio and so on. He kept saying the same lies over and over again. Then you had Dick Cheney and Condi Rice hitting the media outlets, Tim Russert and everyone else, saying the same lie, repeating the same lie. But at the origin of it, it's always the same cabal, these Israeli firsters, and it's not the first time they told these lies. They said the same lies back in the 90s, which might be why they had obsolete signatures about the anthrax, about everything, chemical weapons, all of it. They were recycled lies.
Let's talk about Israel for one moment, because there, there's going to be some folks in the audience who, are maybe touchy about that. So we're being critical of the state of Israel, not necessarily the population of Israel. We're talking about the government of Israel and the decisions they make.
Might not have even been the whole government of Israel. It could have just been the intelligence agency. I mean, the CIA certainly assassinates people without telling the president,
Absolutely.
But yeah, of course it's not the people living there. It's not the American people either. We're talking about government.
We're talking about government. And that's the point that I wanted to stop and make, that we're talking about government, because it's a touchy topic and some people might close their ears thinking that we're being anti-Semitic. But we're no more anti-Semitic than someone who's critical of the United States because of our foreign policy. They don't hate individual Americans like myself. They're critical of our foreign policy. So that's kind of where we're going with this, folks.
If you criticize North Korea, it doesn't mean you hate Asians or Koreans. It just means North Korean government is pretty crazy, because it actually is.
Yes, that's the point that I wanted to make. Now, I like what you have to say about, you use the word privateering. So, you know, the Iraq situation, this isn't the first rodeo. So using your privateering metaphor, can you break down third party state sponsored terrorism, how that has worked historically?
Back in the day, privateers, you were talking about pirate types, so it was on the water, but there's just pirates on the land, but it's a little different. A pirate's basically out for himself to get loot. A privateer has a state sponsor, but it's a secret. And so they can go around stealing, robbing, killing, whatever they're told to do. But if they get caught, they're tried as an individual criminal, although they're actually working for a state and getting assistance from a state. But what I gave the example, if an English ship attacked a Spanish ship, that could cause a war. But if an English pirate attacks a Spanish ship, all you can do is hang the pirate.
Right.
And so, yeah, modern terrorists are basically modern privateers. And we saw that with the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. Everybody knows that the ISI and CIA were giving them guns, money, training, everything to fight the Russians. But you can't really start a war with Pakistan or America over it, because you have what Ali North called plausible deniability.
And yes,
that was in the 80s, the same thing, Iran-Contras. It wasn't the CIA out there shooting Nicaraguans. It was the Contras. But they're getting all the guns, the money, and everything from the CIA or from middlemen from the CIA. It doesn't matter how many layers you put in between the agency and either the Yakuza, the Mafia, that there's always some, you know, somebody, depending on the area, who will pull the trigger for you. But when they get caught, it's just the crook. Can't blame us. And that's a privateer. And so with terrorist cells, some of them are legit terrorists. Some of them are useful idiots. And on the top, you have privateers. And those are the guys like Zawahiri, who we can never catch or find. And so, there's a lot of that in Somalia right now. I mean, you see it everywhere.
I'm glad you're going there. So we can see the historical context of privateering. And, in the modern sense, let's talk about what's going on right now. Somalia, Syria is on everyone's mind. And I think these are modern day examples of what you're saying about privateering. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. Syria, I mean, you have a mix of just straight up mercenaries from Saudi Arabia and other, we call them the GCC countries. And then, of course, privateers. I mean, the CIA has been training people in Jordan and in Turkey. Everybody knows that. Al-Nusra, as well as ISIS, have been getting guns and money from the United States for years. They've been cutting off heads for years, too. But they suddenly got in the news when they were in Iraq, because the U.S. is looking for an excuse to get into Syria. They haven't been able to do airstrikes in Syria. They need a pretext. And the way to do that is what I call rent-a-terrorist. I mean, it's been proven over and over. They took the surplus weapons from Libya, where NATO attacked Libya, mm-hmm. and they were selling them, and they were ended up in the hands of these guys in Syria. And they say, well, we're just arming the moderates. There are no moderates in Syria.
No.
How is it moderate to cut someone's head off and put it on a grill or eat organs? Or the Al-Nusra is worse than ISIS as far as a theatrical way.
Yes.
I mean, they all kill people, but of course. And so they're not moderate. They just want to get rid of Assad, but why? It's not in U.S. interest to do that. They say to weaken Iran. Well, it's not in U.S. interest to weaken Iran either. Iran's no threat to the United States. It's a threat to Israel. And the reason I know this is because it's written out in their own policy papers. They said we're going to topple Iraq, divide it up in three different, you know, religious factions with Sunnis, the Shiites, and Kurds. And then we're going to move into Syria and then Iran and Lebanon. They wrote it all out. Oded Yinan, that's the director of the policy paper. Then you had the Clean Break Strategy, which was from Richard Pearl, who worked in the Defense Department, by the way. Called him Prince of Darkness. That's his official nickname. He calls himself the Prince of Darkness. He looks like Jabba the Hutt.
He does look like Jabba the Hutt. The Prince of Darkness. Wow, that's new on me.
That's his nickname. People, you know, it's bad when even other people in the Pentagon call you the devil.
When the psychopaths that surround you call you the Prince of Darkness. Oh, my God.
But to bring it back to the MIC, because, yeah, you have all this, and you got Zionist religious fanatics, and a lot of people for different reasons, either for money or because of ideology, they want to murder all these people. But the seed money for the Weekly Standard, which was the media arm of the American Enterprise Institute's PNAT group, came from Lockheed Martin. And Lockheed Martin, above Boeing, above any other aerospace company or defense industry, they are the number one defense contractor every single year for the past 11 years in a row, hands down. And they build stuff that doesn't even work. Like the F-22. I mean, that's a piece of junk plane.
And yet they're the number one defense contractor. Interesting.
Yeah. So what you have is they, you know, weapons industries need war. Ever since World War II, they needed to something. The boogeyman became communism. Now it's terrorism. You have to have something to justify these $500 billion budgets they get every year. And that's only from the Defense Department. It's actually a lot more when you add in all the other departments that end up giving them money. You're talking about $1 trillion a year for these wars. They didn't want to go away. So they have a nice hand-in-glove relationship with religious fanatics and people who predictably are going to have conflicts. So that's why you see all this money going to Zionist Jews in Israel and Wahhabi Muslims in Saudi Arabia. And anybody basically I would consider crazy gets a fat paycheck because they are reliable to start conflicts, and conflicts equal profit if you're in the weapons industry. And they could care less how many kids die or houses are just – they don't care.
So we only have 7 minutes until the commercial break. That's not going to be enough time. But how do we get ourselves out from underneath the military-industrial complex, which feeds on radical religious fanaticism and war? How do we get out of this?
In 7 minutes, well, step one, turn the TV off. Because you look at the television parent companies all go back to the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, they get big sponsors from the pharmaceutical industry and everything, but even that goes back to the Pentagon, too. And so I don't know if I can say it all. I'll try real fast, but I'll give you one example. Like, it doesn't matter. You know, pick a three-letter network. Their parent company, say ABC, is owned by Disney. You look at the board of directors of Disney. You get, like, John Bryson and Karen Bice, and they're both on the board of directors for Boeing as well. And Boeing's the second-largest defense contract every year. You look at Fox News, that's Lockheed. Like, you could rename them Raytheon, Halliburton, Lockheed Martin. That's what they ought to be called. MSNBC, of course, half of its, 18% is Microsoft, the rest General Electric. But then you look above that, and it goes back to the same defense industries. So the Pentagon, it's really state propaganda. Well, you have all these networks, but they're all giving you uniform catchphrases, often in the same order and the exact same stories. It's state-run media. All the propaganda you heard about the Soviet Union when you were a little kid, that's America. That's American media. So step one is turn the TV off.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of wonderful alternatives in alternative media right now, so you don't necessarily have to go to Alex Jones. There's so many options.
Yeah.
You know, we're both a fan of...
Light bulbs will kill you.
Listen, folks.
I call it fear porn. It's just scaring the heck out of people and selling it like a televangelist. You know, televangelists have millions of followers and people give up money, but they're just scaring people. Their sermon is always hellfire and brimstone every day.
Yes.
You don't need that. There's a lot of junk online, but there's a lot of good writers, and you have to use prudence and common sense. You know, and somebody tells you there's a Bavarian death cult building camps and your light bulbs are going to control your mind and juice boxes make you homosexual and all the stuff that guy says. Just come on. Turn it off. You don't need that. The problem is that kind of wackadoo media acts as a 9/11 dragnet online. You start to Google something on 9/11, it's going to go to Alex Jones or one of his ilk. All the deceptions about a missile hitting the Pentagon and all this is BS that's been said has either started from Jonestown or started from a guest who he catapulted from his show. And so if you can dig through that and get past that and not allow the taboo to scare you, then you can get fine sites like mine and other good writers about war. It could be about Gaza, Ukraine, Iraq, Iran, what have you. Antiwar.com is a good source. The Global Research, a lot of places where sane people are writing and giving facts. And when someone says it's documented, go look it up, either look it up or don't trust it. Unless the person is proven over and over to tell you the truth, I guess you can start to trust them then, but always try to verify.
Absolutely, verify. So step one, turn off the TV, throw the newspaper in the trash, look for alternative media. But then, you know, a subset of step number one is be critical of the alternative media that you're looking at. Use some discernment, like you said. You mentioned, let's see, what, antiwar.com, Global Research. What are some other, I like Corbett Report.
Report, of course, Boiling Frogs, where I used to work, ANC Report, where I'm working now.
Mm-hmm.
And radio shows like this, I think radio and video are great because, I mean, it reaches more people, period, myself included.
Yes.
It's easier to watch a movie.
Absolutely. And I think that's where people's minds are right now. And I think that podcasting and YouTube are kind of the future of alternative media because, you know, even in our generation, people want their news in that form, and they're the type of people who like the Daily Show and the Colbert Report. They kind of want it to be accessible and maybe a little funny at the same time too. People are no longer buying the lies of the mainstream media. I think even if you talk to just a regular person on the street, they're pretty aware of it at this point to a degree. So I think this is a really exciting time for alternative media.
And like I was on the Jon Stewart Show a couple of times. It's a comedy show, but it's a news show. I think Scott Horton's got a good radio show too. That's another good one. ScottHorton.org. You can listen to those things, mostly anti-war themed, libertarian themed too. Ron Paul has his own institute. It's good on economic issues. You gotta pick and choose. And of course you should read books, you know. So
it's lost
because not everything is online. It is, but there's a lot of great books have been written, you know, that because not everyone who is a researcher and writer is also a filmmaker. A lot of people know a lot of things, but they don't know how to use a computer very well. They don't know how to make a video, but they do know a lot of stuff and they're still writing books. And so sometimes you have to get the info that way.
The trouble is, as I mentioned, you know, we're the YouTube generation. So many fewer people read these days. And again, it's also the Colbert Report generation. So which aren't necessarily book oriented. They want something visual, and stimulating. They want infotainment. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know.
Sometimes they have a bit of both. But yeah.
Well, you know what's exciting? I think that Audible.com, like audiobooks, might be a good way for people who maybe gotten away from reading.
It's good too if you're stuck in your car or something and you can't read. You can listen to an audiobook. I think that's an excellent suggestion. Here in Japan, we have so many trains. We have time to read on the train. But if I had to drive all that, I'd have to have an audiobook. I wouldn't be able to read. So that's another good suggestion. But after you get the media, you have to be proactive. And I like to pile everything into one focus point. And mine right now is to cut aid to Israel. Because trust me, you cut that off and you cut AIPAC off, we wouldn't be at war in the Middle East.
Ooh, I really want to talk about that exhaustively after the break. Okay, folks, we're coming back in a few minutes. I'm here with Ryan Dawson, and this is Project Socrates. We'll be right back.
I'd like to take this time to thank our sponsor. We have a sole sponsor from skinspa.com, skin-spa.com. They have a banner on the website. You can use the code ANC and get 10% off. Bring the spa home. All kinds of beauty and skincare products there, things for men and women. And again, you can get 10% off by using the code ANC as an ANC report. And tell them Rye sent you. It is not a franchise. This is an American small business, family run and owned. So I am thankful for their support, and I certainly enjoy supporting American small businesses as well. It's a win-win situation, so go click on their banner, at least have a look at the site. If you see something you like, you can get 10% off using our code. Thanks.
Welcome back to Project Socrates. I'm on the phone here with Ryan Dawson, and you know what? We're going to put everything we were talking about previous to the break. We were talking about solutions to the issues that we're facing. Let's spend a whole nother show on that. I wanted to talk about Israel in depth, but let's do another show on that. Today is September 11th, and it's really critical that we get the conversation back on track here. So let's talk about your book, Separation of Business and State. I know you have a lot to say on this topic, so just go ahead. What do you have?
Well, yeah, I mean, talking about solutions, if you get that book, I laid a lot out in there about what I think we ought to be doing. But because it is September 11th, while I'm here, let's get into September 11th, the actual events, not just how it was connected to the Iraq War, but
yes.
what happened on the day of 9/11, because I think that's very important. And just saying the buildings fell down too fast, that's not really an answer. It just
no.
doesn't tell you anything. And that seems to be the breadth of other 9/11 films, are either talking about absolute nonsense or basically just saying Building 7 fell too fast. It doesn't tell you who did it or why, or it really doesn't explain anything at all. And I like to get a lot deeper into that. And when you keep looking at who lied about the anthrax and you find out what was happening on the day of 9/11 and the days coming leading up to 9/11, there's an Israeli fingerprint on everything.
Mm-hmm. Now, your film, War by Deception, connects the dots in ways that other films in the genre do not whatsoever. And one of the areas that you cover really succinctly is the issue of the vans, the truck bombs, the spy rings. So can we talk about that? That's really exciting stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Now, there are some sites that will talk about the five dancing Israelis.
Uh-huh.
They don't really name them or say what happened because there was a lot of new information that was released in August of 2011 from Freedom of Information Act that had a lot of details on the five dancing Israelis. So it's worth revisiting. And I put that all in the film. But more important than them, and I'll talk about them in a second, but more important uh-huh. than that was the George Washington Bridge bomb. The police stopped and arrested two guys in the same type of van, which was packed with explosives. And this was reported on the mass media, several newspapers, radio, etc. And then it was whitewashed. The following day, you had Bernard Carrick, who's the police chief who ended up going to jail for fraud, mm-hmm. and Giuliani, whose whole family's in the mafia, saying, what bomb? What are you talking about?
What you talking about?
Well, nothing to see here, you know, very typical Jersey, New York thing.
Uh-huh.
But the George Washington Bridge bomb, you have to say, well, if that was isolated, you say, well, who are these guys and who cares that they're in this van and why were the police even looking for them? The reason was they already had been looking out for urban moving system vans from earlier in the day when a witness saw people dancing and celebrating and flicking lighters with the burning towers in the backdrop. And they turned out to be Israelis. They weren't, and even though everything on the mass media was about Palestinians dancing,
yes.
the actual guys dancing on the event and filming it, they filmed the north side of the North Tower and then the south side of the South Tower, which is exactly where the planes went in, almost if they knew which direction they were going to be coming
right.
from.
That implies foreknowledge. Why would they be stationed at that place at that time with a camera? That it's very suspicious.
Well, yeah, and they all screwed up their polygraph test. They all failed. Oded Eldner screwed up really bad with the timestamps, lying about where they were. So did Yaron Shmuel. He lied to the police as soon as they were busted. And then, of course, the driver, Kutzberg, Paul and his brother were both Mossad agents. He said, without any provocation, he started blaming it on Palestinians. We're not the problem. Palestinians are the problem. Your problems are our problem. But he was the one flicking a green lighter in the scene and being so jubilant about it. But they were positioned there in Doric towers on the roof of the parking garage to have these pictures. Now, he had been in Doric towers the day before and was spotted. He lied to people about being a mechanic or something. But the guys in the elevator picked him out of a police lineup and said, yes, this guy was here the day before. On their person at the time, in their little black fanny pouch, the police
yes.
found a map highlighted with Doric towers on it as well as the WCT. They found places to watch it from the day before. So of course they had foreknowledge. Plus they're filming the first plane hitting. No one knew. I understand everyone whipping their camera out after a plane hit, but they were there before the first plane.
Right.
And you can tell because they took 76 pictures. This is all the new information, we know from radio helicopter that was there positioned over the Hudson River and positioned where it was at certain timestamps contrasted with their timeline, and we know they were there before the first plane. Plus, it's in the pictures, but those are all classified, of course, and the video they were taking is also classified.
So
you don't need to know that because you have them pulled out of the police lineup from the day before, and you have the witness seeing them there, you know, minutes after the plane already set up with cameras and celebrating.
Everything's classified. Sibel Edmonds' testimony, like you said, she might as well have been talking the wall.
She was in a SIF facility, yeah, a soundproof room. Like, they just wanted to know what she knew. And in her book, Classified Woman, it's very interesting. I mean, the whole thing is interesting, but to me, I found something very interesting is they said that a courier was sent to Baluchistan, or maybe she didn't say that, but I figured out that's where it was, somewhere in Iran. By courier, they sent blueprints of the World Trade Centers and a bridge. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that was a George Washington Bridge, considering they nearly blew it up.
Right.
Now, in the 93 World Trade Center attack, which involved Josie Hadass, who's from the Mossad, and that whole botched FBI sting operation, that original plan was to knock one tower into the other and to blow up the Holland Tunnel. Pretty similar. And right. Anthrax was stolen back in 93 from the same labs, too. The
1993 incident is so similar to what happened on 9/11, but yet no one drew any comparisons between the two events whatsoever.
No, but the only difference is they blame the Muslim Brotherhood instead of Al-Qaeda. But it ended up not working because, I mean, you know what happened. The informant recorded his conversations with the FBI, so they really couldn't go through with it.
No.
But, yeah, Dr. Rippey and Philip Zach, Zachariah, had stolen anthrax in 93, and they're on video recording doing it. And instead of looking at that, they went around chasing Al-Qaeda and then Stephen Hatfield and eventually Bruce Ivins, who was suicided before he went to trial.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Ivins didn't drive to New Jersey and Florida and send hoax anthrax and actual anthrax to these different people and show back up at work in Maryland without taking any flights or anything. There's no way.
No.
He was innocent. He was a patsy and they murdered him.
Right. And that seems
I believe they murdered Perry Mixel too, who she worked with him. That's another. I might, if I do a sequel, I'll add all that info. I have some new info on 9/11. I made a film back in 2006, 2008, 2011, just updating it. But I think I have enough for a new film.
Part two. Cool. Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a film or a book, but I'll tell you everything anyway. Just make a film so more people see it. I don't care about selling it or anything. I just want people to know.
And that's what I really like about your work. It's really genuine. You're not, you know, it's not the fear pornographers like Mr. Jones, you know. You're not trying to make $1 million on this. You're just getting the information out there.
I just did a thing yesterday about Flight 93 in Jonestown, saying all the calls were fake and there was no black box and da-da-da-da-da. What that does is it prevents you from catching Dick Cheney in a bold-faced lie about where he was in the POC bunker at the time, because remember Netta saying it's 30 miles out, it's 20 miles out. You know they're not talking about Flight 93 because Flight 93 never got 30 miles out. It was 200 miles away when it went down. They have to be talking about the Pentagon, which they were, but he doesn't want to admit that because it screws up his timeline of where he was, and then he's got to explain where – but the thing that's much worse than that is – it takes puts a smokescreen up for the Israeli role in 93 too, because the passengers did crash the plane. Yes, there was debris. I know loose change showed you a little hole, but they lied. They have the black boxes. It was in the Massawi trial. You heard the recordings. There's a transcript of the whole thing. I mean, you can't get the EMTs, firemen, police, victims, family members all to go in on it and lie to you. Look,
no.
They took the plane down. But what's interesting is on those calls and on the black box, Zayed Al-Jarrah's voice is missing. All of them report three hijackers instead of four. And then his voice is nowhere to be found. Even when they're all screaming, you know, Allah is great at the end, he's not talking. The only evidence they have of him getting on the plane is this passport they said they found with the corner burned on it. Now, Zayed Al-Jarrah's first cousin, this isn't older cousins, Alex Jones, meaning 33 degrees away. You know, his first cousin was busted in Lebanon as a spy for the Israelis.
Right.
Really? An Al-Qaeda hijacker's first cousin is a spy for Israel? Yes. I mean, that's admitted. New York Times admits that. And so when you won't talk about the phone calls or the black box and you act like it was shot with a missile and you ignore all the witnesses and the physical evidence, da da da. Then no one asks questions about Zayed Al-Jarrah because they're like, oh, they shut that down. I heard it on Alex Jones. You never get to the point where you can start asking the questions that should be asked. Why is this guy's voice not on the black box? How come nobody reports four hijackers, et cetera? And Al-Qaeda hijacker's first cousin was a spy for the Israelis? He was busted in Lebanon, raided his house, got his computers, everything. Totally. His name was Ali Al-Jarrah. Completely busted.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you start to see. Within these hijacker cells were privateers. Atta was one. Al-Jarrah was one. Omari was one. I haven't figured out 175 yet, but I'm sure somebody was in the cell.
Let's talk about Atta a moment, because Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer, who is a friend of mine who is coming on the program at some point, can you tell us about Able Danger and how that is really important to this story and how it relates to Mohammed Atta, the supposed lead hijacker?
Yeah, and they burned Schaefer's books. Able Danger had mapped out not only they had Atta in Hamburg in Germany already, right? With two hijackers living with them. They had his phone number. They had his handler. His handler was caught and sent to Syria to be tortured, by the way, from Assad. But I mean, torturing Al Qaeda, and now they're the bad guys. But they knew where he was getting his money from, who recruited him. They had his number. They knew who he was living with. And he still ended up in the United States, openly living in Florida, drinking in bars, even though he's a Muslim. Meeting with Jack Abramoff, by the way. But Able Danger had everything mapped out, and yet no action was taken. And we could see this with Al-Hazmi and Al-Midhar. They were both hijackers involved in the USS Cole bombing, on the State Department's no-fly list, yet they were openly living in California, ended up on Flight 77. John O'Neill was looking after Al-Hazmi in particular, and he died on 9/11. In the World Trade Centers. So we know that they knew. But the problem is, and this gets fishy whether this is on purpose or not, because yes, the United States has profiteers and privateers. Sorry, same thing really. They have privateers that are on the look away list. So like they're terrorists, but there are terrorists. So whenever they do something, we look away. And some of these on the look away list ended up becoming 9/11 hijackers. Now you can say they got double crossed, or you can say they're in on it the whole time. In either scenario, they fit. But we shouldn't have privateers, and we shouldn't have a look-away list. We shouldn't be hiring terrorists anyway. So that's already bad on the face of it. Even if you take the lesser evil, you still end up with evil. And they ended up pulling us off. And so Schaefer writes a book about Able Danger and how they had been tracking Atta and all the information, overload of information they had on this guy. The Pentagon, it was called Operation Darkheart or something, I think. And yeah, they burned it.
Yeah,
and he had second edition, but he had to edit the heck out of it. But I mean, I've got more damning information than that out for free. So.
So the question that people are going to ask, and it's a valid question. So how do we know that our privateers didn't roll over on us, that they didn't just double cross us? Is this blowback? Because, you know, when you talk to Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer, he says this is, you know, just idiocracy within our government.
Yeah, unintended consequences. Da, da, da.
And that we were double crossed and blah, blah, blah. But you make a pretty strong case for the fact that the privateers did not necessarily roll over on us, that there is a plan here, a cohesive plan.
Yeah, why is one of them related to the Mossad? And then when you look at the anthrax and all the lies about Iraq, we know those are conscious lies. We knew that Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. They administrated went with it anyway. Bush had bombed Iraq in February before 9/11 even happened. He was hell-bent on getting his war and didn't care whether or not it was true. He knew these people were unreliable. His father used to call them the crazies in the basement. Not to say George Bush Sr. was some saint, but they knew these people weren't trustworthy, and they did it anyway. And when you look into Richard Blee, you look at how no one was punished after the fact, how they all got promoted instead, you start to see it was not blowback. This was intentional.
And it was laid out in the documents ahead of time, you know, the PNAC documents, et cetera, et cetera.
PNAC had a line about Saddam, anthrax, and Osama bin Laden all in the same sentence. They had Osama bin Laden's picture on their July issue, July 30th, you know, just weeks before 9/11, blaming it on him. And they talked about Saddam and anthrax. They had already pre-written all these lies, the policy papers, what they were going to do afterward, get the heroin out of or opium out of Afghanistan, use the black market drug money to pay for all these privateers around the world, topple Iraq. They spelled it all out. Oded Yanan, they spelled it out in the 80s. They've been wanting to do this for a long time. So to say this accidentally happened, I'm not buying that. I don't think it was a double cross. I think it was just a regular cross.
Oh, yeah, straight up cross. Now, we only have less than 15 minutes left to go, and I really want to talk about urban moving systems and Dominic Suter. And yeah. Let's go there. So tell us about that.
We got to talk about Denko Mechanical if we can squeeze it in, too.
Yeah.
Well, Urban Moving Systems was a moving company. It was a front for the Mossad, kind of like the half-Israeli Zim shipping company that broke a large lease to get out of the World Trade Center shortly before they blew up. But that was the company that was hiring the guys who we found filming and celebrating the attacks, and they were driving Urban Moving System vans, as was the George Washington Bridge van. Or truck, excuse me. It was an Aero truck with Urban Moving Systems spray painted on it. So it's Aero trucks is, I guess they use Ryder trucks too many times. switched. But, he had this 12 computer hard drive confiscated from him. He and his wife fled back to Israel, and we never did find out what was on the computer hard drives, but we know all the underlings failed their polygraph test. They had passports all to leave to go to different countries all over the world immediately, and thousands of dollars in cash. Elmer had that stuffed in his sock, about $5,000. So they were ready to flee and get out of there right away. And so, of course, the FBI raided, the Joint Terrorist Task Force went in and, with the police to Urban Moving Systems, and of course, Souter fled, and his name was officially on the FBI suspect list, which was given to the Italians and the Polish and others. And so we have his name. I have the English one too. It's in the film. I took a screenshot of it. He's there. Dominic Souter. There's a lot of suspicious people, and I'm still digging through that list actually, because a lot of them changed their names now, but he fled back to Israel and his underlings were filming the attacks, and it was obvious that
we let a suspect go and flee the country following 9/11. And can you tell
us
how that happened? Can you tell us who facilitated?
Chertoff, of course. I mean, Chertoff ends up becoming the new head. He was in the Justice Department, and then Justice Department. What a backwards name. And so 1984, we're the Justice Department.
Right?
We're like the Legion of Doom. But anyway, for superhero fans will know what I'm talking about, but it's the Injustice Department. And then he became part of the new Homeland Security chief. And of course, he let all these guys go. He let all of them go. He let the dancing Israelis go too. But what's interesting to me is that Urban Moving Systems got a $500,000 loan only in 2001, not the year before and not the year after. It just existed for this short time period, and it got money from U.S. banks, $500,000 for all these trucks and equipment. And one of the Aero trucks, same truck, didn't have the logo spray painted on it, but the same cabal, was driven from New York to Tennessee on the day of 9/11 by a group that was one of the guys that was part of a group who was busted in Tennessee getting fake IDs, because at the time you don't need a social security number to get a driver's license in Tennessee. I bet you do now. But separate to that, they arrested these guys in Tennessee, and one of them, his name is Hanan Sarfati. He had a wallet with some cards in it, one of which had a pass to do work in the basement of the World Trade Center dated September 5th.
Yeah. This is really interesting. Go ahead.
And so they had been doing work in the world basement. They said, we were working on sprinkler systems and fire prevention systems in the basement of the tower. He's saying we. So of course the other guys were part of this too. They're quickly trying to get these new IDs all of a sudden. The lady that worked at the DMV, who was probably in on it considering she got her car from Khalid Odella, who was the ringleader of this faction, she ended up burning to death inside her car. It wasn't an accident. Witnesses saw her on fire prior to her car crashing going
and
down the road.
Gas tank remained intact, so it wasn't that her fuel ignited somehow.
She had gasoline in her clothes. FBI agent Susan Nash went in and did a report. This is well documented. It's in the Tennessee newspapers and everything. It was big news. It's just with Alex Jones screaming about Luciferians or whatever. A lot of people never heard of this, but okay. So they're doing work in the World Trade Center. All right. Maybe they were. Maybe they just happened to be guys doing work on the fire prevention systems right before 9/11, right? Except that the company they work for, Denko Mechanical, and they had a card for Magic Heating and Plumbing, were owned by this guy named David Enko or Denko and this other guy named Connell. And all the work in the World Trade Center is supposed to be done in-house. They don't contract out to do that. And so these people fixing the elevators, there's another story similar to this about the elevators, but these people were doing this work, shouldn't have been there at all. And of course, guess who fled to Israel? Now I have the physical paper, the indictment and sentencing of Denko and Connell from the district attorney in New York. I got a physical copy of it.
Wow.
That
oh, give
is
me
not
the,
in the film.
Link to it your
oh,
site.
They
and
lied
I'll
about
the
so
show.
Much. They lied about so
oh,
much
God.
to get these people in there. But, you know, the address on the card that Sarfati had was a residential address with an obsolete business license. It wasn't even a legit like heating and plumbing type company. But this company had been doing fake work in a number of buildings, not just the World Trade Center. That's what they ended up getting in trouble for. And this gets all back into Charles Kushner and the real estate tycoon who set a honey trap up for his sister. And he's the guy that got Governor McGreevy caught with the Israeli national. But the whole story was, oh, the governor's gay. It's like, who cares if he's gay? I'm more interested in him giving a high, you know, six-figure salary to some Israeli who's, you know, working at our nuclear power plants. But anyway, that was his son's paper. The New York Observer was the first one to report about the anthrax, by the way. It's just like this long circle, and it takes hours to explain it all, which is why I made a film. I see we have like 6 minutes or so left.
Yeah, we only have 6 minutes, but I just want to, you know, kind of put the pieces together. So what you were explaining about Denko and Magic Heating and that whole situation, that is the answer to one of the frequently asked questions about 9/11. Okay, fine.
Who knocked out the fire prevention? They said the fireproofing was jolted off by the plane. That stuff's like sticky.
Right.
You know, no, it wasn't. You know, they cut it off on purpose. And if you wanted to bring anything or in and out of those buildings, you got a fake moving company and fake plumbers and fake electricians. So
right.
There
so
you go.
That explains the frequently asked question of how were the charges placed discreetly if we are talking about explosives in a building, because you have these individuals who are there doing, quote, work, using work passes that are fraudulent because all work is done in-house, you reference in your film.
They got a $250,000 bail. Truck driver got a $250,000 bail to get out. I know Della never went to jail. He was back in Israel. He lived in Jerusalem. He was there hours after the sentencing. He was gone. And his underling got bailed out. The rest of them are getting out of jail this year. I think if I had the money, I'd go down there and interview him, but I don't. So I hope someone else can go down to Memphis and check it out. But I mean, what kind of truck driver got $250,000 to get out of jail, by the way? And basically the judge knew what was going on, but they weren't in trouble for 9/11. They were in trouble for fake IDs. So he gave them the maximum penalty he could, and they just paid it and got out.
So we only have, you know, about 4 minutes left. I want to give you ample time to point folks in the direction of where they can find your work. But in closing, I just want to make like a summary here. I want to say to the listeners that, you know, maybe we should use Occam's razor here, that the simplest answer might be the correct one, because to look at this story and to look at all of these events as a series of ridiculous coincidences, that is not probable. So if we use Occam's razor, you know, I think that maybe you could begin to connect the dots here. So you're definitely going to want to see Ryan's film, War on Deception. You're going to want to own a copy of it. You're going to want to give it to your mom or your dad or your best friend. You're going to want to read some of his books. So can you, we have, you know, 3-4 minutes. Can you tell us how the listeners can read and watch your work?
Yeah, War by Deception is free. Just type that in and watch it on Vimeo or YouTube. It should be free anyway, unless they take it down after the interview. But I do have to repost it now and then. I think right now the title's 9/11, War by Deception, because I didn't have 9/11 in the title and everybody knew what it was. But it's called, if you put in War by Deception in Google, it'll be the first thing to pop up. You can watch it for free. If you want to get a DVD, you can either download it off YouTube and burn one, or you can order one, but it doesn't matter. If you want to do that, though, you go to ANC Report and just send a donation and say you want a DVD. But they're slow because I have to mail them from Japan. That's why I recommend you just watch it for free. What's easier is watch it for free, and if you want to send me money, just send me a donation as a thank you. But if you want a DVD, honestly, it's faster to burn it yourself, but I will mail you one if I have to, but that's the easiest way. As for my other work, because I mean, 9/11 was many, many years ago. ANC Report all the time. We have a podcast and reports. So it's the anti-neocon report. So if you just write ancreport.com and then listen to the shows, we're always talking about current events and now and then. Of course, because it's 9/11 now, I have a lot of stuff up there about 9/11. And then you can use the tag option to go read things about 9/11. And I've documented everything. I have screenshots of papers and all the documents about everything I'm saying about 9/11 and Iraq and War by Deception. But if you have to, you know, pause it. If you want to go see every document, they're all over that site. So there you go. So if I can write a book in the future, I will.
So the new documents that you mentioned in the show today, regarding Denko and, Magic Plumbing or whatever, those are going to be, on ANC.com.
ANCReport.com. Yeah. Cool. The Denko Mechanical and all that. I'll put the indictments up for everyone to read. It's interesting. They might already be online. I don't know. They kind of, once it leaks, they go a lot faster now than they did 13 years ago, but. Yeah, I'll put them both up right after this interview, actually, so it'll be there before 9/11 since we're recording this now. And ANCReport.com is an excellent source. Bookmark it, RSS feed it, tweet it, Facebook it, etc. We've got to talk about 9/11. We have to also talk about the Iraq War. It is unfair and immoral to just disassociate the two when Iraq was wrongly associated to 9/11, which led to a war where millions of people have died after they already had nearly a million dying from sanctions and starvation, most of them being children. People say half a million. Half a million was in 1997 when Albright was questioned about it. There were several more years of sanctions. It is absolutely disgusting what our government has done to those people. And Saddam never would have been in power to begin with if the CIA hadn't put him there as the Baathist to fight the communists. I mean, it's just a long story. Another film, after you watch War by Deception, watch Decades of Deception. I went from 1950 to the year 2000 going over covert operations. So if anybody ever says, oh, conspiracy, just hand them the film. Because every covert operation in history is a conspiracy. It's a bunch of people getting together and lying and doing something that would be illegal if anyone else did it. It's called a covert operation. Don't use the word conspiracy. Call it covert operation.
Covert operation.
Yeah. Iran-Contra is very similar to 9/11. You had a joint operation between the Israelis and the U.S. to go murder a lot of people. And they do it all the time. They do it in Syria right now.
Unfortunately, I have to stop you there because we are out of time. It has been a pleasure, Ryan. Thank you.
I have no off button. No.
You know what? If you would do me the honor, I'd like to have you back real soon because, you know what, there's so many issues that we touched upon today that I'd like to dig into. So hopefully you'll do us the honor in the future. So I appreciate that. And I'm going to go ahead and stop recording because we're...
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'll come back in November. Maybe we'll talk about JFK. There's a lot of nonsense about that, too. I hope I can straighten that out. Thanks for listening to the ANC Report. And if you have a podcast or radio show and you'd like to talk about 9/11 or any of these issues, the Iraq War, etc., please contact me through the contact button on ANCReport.com and we can try to arrange an interview.